Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Our theme for today is the good, the true, and the beautiful. And before we begin, I'd like to mention that we have a gift for you again today. Stay with us, and later on in the show, we'll talk about how you can get your gift. And our thought for today comes from the works of Alice Bailey. The good, the true, and the beautiful is on its way, and for it, humanity is responsible. And Alice Bailey is the author of all 24 volumes of literature, and all of her literature is spoken about on this show, from one show to the next. Every dialogue that we have emanates from the works of Alice Bailey. How can we define the good, what is beautiful, and what is true?
Well, it's not easy because these are such familiar concepts that I suppose anything one says descends into platitudes very easily. So all I can do is draw upon the writings of Alice Bailey that might give us a fresh insight. In her writings, the good is described or defined as the will to good, which works out on the physical plane or the material outer level of life as goodwill. And somewhere in her writings, I read that good is related to that which relates the individual to the larger whole. So taking that, it would mean that the good is that which produces the well-being, the welfare of the whole, and not the good of the individual, which might go against the interests of the larger common good. And the beautiful, she says, concerns a quality of life. It's an expression of the soul. And that suggests the quality of radiance. You know how so often we say that something or someone is beautiful even though its physical form is not perfect. And that might relate to the factor of radiance, which is an inner quality that expresses through the outer form. That's beauty. And the true, she says, is as much of divine expression as any individual can demonstrate at his particular point in evolution. And that's why we often say one person's truth is different than another person's truth, because we aren't all at the same point in evolution. But we have to live up to our own highest understanding of what is true and reasonable and right.
When you say the group, though, is it the type of thought where we judge our actions and say, well, if everyone did this, would it be good? And then would that be a criteria for what is good?
That's one way to apply it. Have it come back at you from some other source. How would you feel? And ask yourself, does it apply to the common good? Does it serve the good of the greater whole?
There's of course, truth is a relative term. We tend to see ourselves, for example, as separate beings, separate from all others. But this is true at a certain stage at the personality level, but not true at the level of the soul, because at that level where we begin to realize our oneness, and that is the great truth that lies behind this illusionary. Illusion that we are separate beings. Perhaps at one level we are, but at the level of wholeness, that is the great truth, that we are all one. So there is a oneness there. So, I mean, that's kind of an example how truth can be true at one level and not true at another.
What's interesting too is, Dale, as you're saying that what's true, we can't really rely on our five senses to determine what truth is then.
No, we can't. We have to look beyond, to...
But we have to start with our five senses. I don't think I agree with that. I think we have to rely upon our five senses and the sixth sense, which is our intuition.
Yeah, I was just going to say that we have to look beyond the five senses as well, that's where the real truth lies behind the form.
Mm-hmm. How are the good, the true, and the beautiful, how are they related to evolution?
Well, we could say that they are impulses to aspire or to move forward, because our sense of what is good and beautiful and true creates a kind of a friction within ourselves. We see something of beauty, of goodness, and we compare it or match it to our present attainment and expression, and we usually find ourselves coming up short. Mm-hmm. And so you could say that these values provide a kind of a spur or an impetus to change and grow.
Yeah. One of my thoughts is about concerning the writings of Alice Bailey is she speaks of power of the good, the beautiful, and the true as, quote, mystical perception, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
What does she mean by this?
Well, that's a phrase that's often puzzled me, but she says that mystical perception or mystical vision is the vision of the soul which dwells within the person, the divinity that is within the human being, has a different view or vision or expectation of life than we, the outer personality, might have. So it manifests as something that's innate within every human being and that gives that human being the power to go out to or to aspire to something finer and higher and better than his present circumstances. And maybe that's related to a comment that a defense attorney, a very famous defense attorney, made some years ago explaining why she defends people that commit such terrible crimes. She said that she believed that people are better than their worst action. And I think that's related to this statement. There is within every human being, no matter of how low a quality they might be on the outer level, an ability to aspire to something better. It might express as a love of family or of their group, or it might express as kind of an appreciation of beauty through artistic expression, or maybe the mind is awake and alive and inquiring and curious.
It's really the kind of the basis for all striving for some kind of vision of perfection. I think because we see it in artistic creations, the registration and the recording of the good and the beautiful and the true, and this is produced through the writer or the poet or the artist or the architect, and we see these types of people, these artistic people, are always striving to reach for some vision that they have.
And usually they're frustrated by their inability to really express it perfectly.
Right, yeah. And it's the urge to also to scientists, or to explorers. They're reaching out, their urge to discover and to penetrate to the secrets of nature and to the secrets of the earth. Explorers, whether on earth or even now in space, they're trying to seek something that's beyond themselves or where they presently stand. And it gets back to that mystical perception that you mentioned, because that's innate in every one of us, I think, to some degree, and perhaps more so in all these outstanding artists and creators.
Mm-hmm. For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. And we do have that gift for you, and it's very easy to order the gift. The gift is a cassette. Generally, we've given away booklets to you in the past, but now we have a cassette. It's called, the title is Beginning to Meditate, and I think you'll enjoy it, as I did. And I've derived a lot of benefits from meditation. I'm a calmer person as a result of it. I think more clearly, I think it also promoted good health, not only for myself, but it gives me a chance to meditate on other people's well-being. So if you'd like that cassette, it's a gift. Just give us a call at the toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. Once again, it's 1-866-695-8247. And that's to order the cassette, our gift to you, Beginning to Meditate. And if you'd like to order the book that the show is based on, all of our dialogue is based on the writings of Alice Bailey. She's the founder of the Lucis Trust organization that sponsors this show. But one book out of the 24 volumes upon which most of this discussion is based is titled Education in the New Age. Once again, Education in the New Age. And you can call us to order the gift, which is our cassette, Beginning to Meditate, or our book if you'd like to, at 1-866. An easy way to remember it is NY Lucis. Think of New York Lucis, 1-866. NY Lucis, or once again, 1-866-695-8247. And although you can order our book from Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, Borders Bookstore, if you order it directly from Lucis Trust, you'll get a 10% discount if you order all 24 volumes of books. So explore life with us. As we frequently mention, we're not a religion. We're a philosophy, and we're a philosophy organization. We like to explore life, look at the deeper meanings of life, and I think reading Lucis Trust books will give you hope for a life and perhaps motivate you to examine your own position in this world, your own life, where you're going, where you've been, and cause you to think about the most important gift that you have, and that's your own life. The Alice Bailey writings also relate the good, the true, and the beautiful to disease. Can you explain a bit about this?
Well, it's based on one of the laws of healing and disease which are outlined in the book by Alice Bailey called Esoteric Healing. And that law says perfection calls imperfection to the surface. Good drives evil from the form of man in time and space. And the method used is harmlessness.
There's another law that also addresses this whole question of disease and the good and the beautiful. And it says, disease, both physical and psychological, has its roots in the good, the beautiful, and the true. And one might ask, how can this be? I mean, what does disease have to do with the good, the beautiful, and the true? And well, according to the writings of Alice Bailey, this comes about because this divine urge within the human being tends to produce, in fact, this divine urge is essentially the soul aspect, and it tends to produce a resistance in the personality life because the personality, the physical personality, has its own agenda, has its own values, and its own direction that it wants to go.
Which is usually a status quo, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's usually a purely material direction and material values. But on the other hand, the soul has its own plans and its own direction and purposes and values that it is trying to work through this personal personality. And so there tends to set up a point of friction within the personality life, and this in turn may cause an area of inflammation somewhere in the body, which in turn leads to a disease of some kind or another. So we don't always attribute disease to the discontent of the personality life with the soul impact, but according to the ageless wisdom teachings, there is this factor that's at work, and perhaps if we begin to think of disease in this terms, then it might put a whole different perspective on the way we look at disease in life.
It makes it seem sort of inevitable, an inevitable part of the human condition until one's achieved perfection, which for most of us is a long way down the road.
And it also says that in time, and this may be a little hard to believe too, that in time disease will begin to disappear or phase out or become less of a problem, because as the energy of goodwill becomes more apparent and prominent in human living and becomes a spontaneous reflection, a spontaneous way of acting, which is a soul value, a soul energy, then as this happens, then disease will begin to disappear.
Right, but I guess there's another way of looking at this that I think our society, and particularly the healers who are trying to make human beings aware of more alternative approaches to health, which is very, very good, sometimes seem to give the point of view that if you are ill, you've done something wrong, you've failed somehow. And it's true that disease is a combination of the two words, dis-ease, out of harmony, out of sync, or out of order. And of course, that makes us think that's not good, and therefore the person who has perfect health must be a very advanced, very successful, very good person. But when we look at disease as, in terms of what you've just said, that there's a friction that's imposed by the indwelling divinity upon its obstinate, calcified, unresponsive vehicle or form, the personality, then disease can be an expression of an urge to growth and an urge to evolution, an urge to become something more. It doesn't mean failure always.
So what you're saying is that there, it could be a more or less a conflict or a disharmony between between the soul that wants to bring the individual along a certain path and and the personality within the individual who says, I want to stay within my comfort, my familiar surroundings, my security.
Quo. Okay. Yeah, I have things just the way I like them. Please don't ask me to change or move or budge in any way. I have things just the way I like it. Mm-hmm. That's the personality. That isn't necessarily good, and the soul might view that attitude with real horror.
And the personality views disease with real horror also.
True, we do. I'm not saying, oh, good, let's all get ill. Yeah. No, we resist that, and rightly so. I'm just saying this judgmental view that says somebody who is ill has done something wrong with his life doesn't necessarily hold up.
No, but when when one begins to direct his life more towards a spiritual orientation, let's say, then I think there is more of a peace of mind that comes over one, and one is beginning, there is a synchronization there between the outer life and the inner life, and I think that's very important. It reminds me of a studies that are just coming out now in terms of in hospitals, and that's the use of prayer, the effect that prayer has on patients, and the finding that it, of course, people who pray already knew this, but doctors are finding out that it does have a definite effect upon the health of the patient and the well-being and the healing process. And I think if you look at it more esoterically and spiritually, what's really happening is prayer takes the focus off the physical problem, off the physical disease. It lifts the focus up towards the spirit. And this opens up a channel to the spirit, and that energy of the soul can pour in more freely, and that allows a healing to take place, and that allows a feeling of more contentment and at ease, and it does produce a healing effect. And that's one of the values of prayer, because it lifts the focus of consciousness away from the physical onto the spiritual, and that's very important.
Well, does education have a role in developing a sense of the good, the beautiful, and the true?
Oh, I think it has an absolutely vital role. And I wonder whether modern education really gives sufficient value and importance to awakening within, especially within young children, a sense of the good, the beautiful, and the true. In some ways, our society seems so cynical and so reluctant to promote values or even to discuss them. But I've often wondered what effect, for example, beauty might have on the development of a child. We know that children, and especially adolescents, have their own taste in music, and sometimes, well, almost inevitably, it's a style of music that older people don't appreciate, and that's just a part of life, that there are these differences in generations. But what if they had to supplement their own adolescent preferences in music, a good dose of what we consider really uplifting fine music, classical music and so on? What might that impulse of beauty do to their sensitization, to their ability to aspire to something better? The same with literature and drama. I saw a program recently about a class of children, not from a particularly economically well-to-do area at all, who had put on a production of a Shakespeare play, and it was not easy for them, especially to master the language, which is, you know, is Middle English, and it's not easy for any of us to be comfortable in that dialogue. But by golly, they did it, and they were uplifted by it and inspired by it. So yes, I think education has a vital role in this.
Yes, and unfortunately, you wonder about today's educators and whether they're really recognize the value of this, because they seem to be, that's one of the programs that first get cut, you know, the
arts and the humanities.
The arts and the humanities, you know, there goes the band, yeah. And there goes the plays and all the creative works. And this is really what would draw out the great spiritual aspect of every child if they could all participate in these activities. Yeah. But they're being cut out because, you know, sports right. comes first, and that's where the money is. So.
You know, Isaac Asimov, the famous science fiction writer, said one time that if our civilization ever ceased to exist, that future worlds and civilizations, that the primary thing that they would be interested in discovering about us would be the humanities that we had, the arts, all of the poetry that we have, that would be the prime thing, because any society will eventually discover the law of relativity. So that was an interesting comment by Asimov. But if a sense of the good, the beautiful, and the true produces a recognition of our shortcomings, who sets the standards by which we are measured?
Well, yes, that's an interesting thought, the recognition of our shortcomings. Speaking of the friction that Dale mentioned a while ago, that's generated by the soul and its vision and the personality's recognition that it isn't matching that vision fully, doesn't that suggest that the judge of the shortcomings comes from ourselves, from our inner self?
Yeah.
We are, in many ways, probably our own harshest judge, and we need to learn to be merciful and patient with ourselves, even as we strive towards something better, something finer. But I think that judgment is rendered by the soul.
Yes, I was interested in reading one of the definitions, in fact, in the dictionary of good, what good is. And it says there, at least one of the definitions, is something conforming to the moral order of the universe, or conforming to a standard. So we're always striving to conform to some higher standard. And I suppose ultimately it is God that is the judge of the standards that we set for ourselves, and he's the one. Ultimately, that's where the judgment comes.
We learn to make this judgment step by step, I suppose, through choices and values, and through our ability to discriminate between the lesser good and the greater good, and our ability to set aside perhaps personal preference sometimes, or the comfortable choice, and choose something that's that our inner voice says is finer and better. And that takes time and experience and setbacks, and that's what differentiates people from one from another. The real authentic spiritual seeker is the one who will not give up, who will not stop striving towards something better, who is always in a process of becoming and growing. And not sitting back in self-satisfaction.
So the true person who's on the path of spiritual self-discovery does not reach a plateau where he sits comfortably and says, I'm not going on anymore.
Well,
I'm not continuing on that path any longer.
I don't think one dare say that. Maybe when you get to a certain age, you have to let up on the inner pressure, but I'm not so sure about that, because I once heard a very old lady, I think she was 102 or 103, say that every day she tried to be a better person. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should never give up on that striving to develop our tastes and our level of our sense of beauty, our recognition of the true and the good. It's a self-imposed standard that we're trying to meet, and the goal is always extended further in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's said that the soul, though, never gives us more than we can handle in any one particular lifetime. So I suppose there is a limit to, and there are goals that are set at that spiritual level. But no, I agree with what you said. We can always improve our attitudes to life, our attitudes to other people, and that is as much striving for the good and the true and the beautiful as just what we do with our own particular thought life and the relationships that we have with other people. You can always tweak those little things.
Don't you think if the soul doesn't give us more than we can handle as a goal, that suggests to me that maybe every human being has a different set of standards to meet and a different realm of possibility of attainment. And we have to live up to our own highest sense of what is best and most beautiful. It might vary with each person, but our conscience is our guide, really. Our inner voice that says, oh, I can do better, I can aspire to something finer. That's what we ought to listen to, and not anything said to us by society, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think the beauty of the universe is in its diversity. I agree with you, Sarah. Maybe its joy is a universe that can harmonize that diversity. But this show is funded by the generous donations of our listeners, and we need and we welcome your support. And in closing, we invite you to ponder on this thought. Goodwill is the touchstone that will transform the world. Goodwill is love in action. It is the energy that draws us together in right relationship. There is a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.